WGR Sports Radio presents.
If somebody told me at the start of the season, through 12 games, you'd be tied with the Maple Leafs and the Panthers in the standings, I'd sign up for it.
Oh, 100%. Stanley Cup champions.
The only problem is that got wished on a monkey's paw.
Why is it a monkey's paw?
What do you mean?
Would opposable thumbs not make it a hand?
Sports Talk Saturday.
Monkeys don't have paws, but rather hands and feet. Wow.
So the monkey's paw. That's why then you know that it's that specific. Unfavorable consequences, as is the definition of the monkey's paw.
We'll call it a hand. I'm just going to
call
it a hand.
No, don't call it a monkey's hand.
It is. No. It is. It's not a paw. Monkeys don't have paws. They have hands and feet.
It's a monkey's paw.
The only reason it's a paw because it's more sinister.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm not going off of that. I'm going off of science.
No.
Monkey's hand.
No.
Monkey's
no.
hand.
Science has nothing to do with evil.
On WGR.
Welcome back into Sports Talk Saturday. No monkey's paws to worry about as of right now.
Yet.
We'll see. Bill Belichick is about to get underway with North Carolina. Jeez, I'm not used to seeing that face on TV anymore. But anyway,
season for North Carolina and Bill Belichick.
Probably last, too. So we'll see what happens there. But more important things to turn to. We now turn to the Western Hotline. Pat Malacaro joins us because the Bisons, they're in Rochester playing the what is Rochester? Why am I blanking? Red Wings. The Red Wings. Pat, thanks for taking some time out of your Saturday. We're excited to have you on. Talk about some baseball storylines as well as the wild card race is pretty exciting here. How's it going?
Doing well, guys. Yeah, excited. Thanks for having me on today. Excited to be on WGR tonight as well. First time this season, Bisons have a chance to be broadcast on WGR 550 for 6:45 first pitch. And looking to get back to the winning ways. They've lost three in a row right now to Rochester. And the interesting part is both teams are in the chase for the second half championship. The season split into two halves. Memphis defeated Rochester by a half game in the first half. So whoever wins the second half goes to Memphis. The Red Wings are tied for first. The Bisons are kind of hanging around. So it's a big game tonight for the Herd.
Pat, just looking, like you said, it's a big game tonight. They're kind of hanging around. What is the storyline of the season, I guess, been for the Bisons, for someone who might not have been watching the entire way, checking in here and there, just seeing what's happening? Is there anything lingering injury-wise or anything like that that they're kind of dealing with?
Yeah, it's been an interesting year because you look back to last year, and when I talk to you guys, even you know, I think back to the right before the Blue Jays started their playoff run to the World Series. I talked to you from Rogers Center in Toronto, and we talked about how so many Bison players from the 25 season were making a big impact, like Addison Barger, Nathan Lucas, and on the pitching side of things, Mason Fluharty. So many pitchers were impacted and position players impacted the Blue Jays. This year, Toronto has had so many injuries that the Bisons haven't had a consistent roster all year long. And I think when you look back on the epitaph of the 2026 season, whether the Bisons win the second half or not, you're going to look back and say, so many players had to go up to Toronto because the Blue Jays had so many injuries, and it just wasn't a consistent roster, and that's why the team struggled to really get going. They're playing about 500 now, so they played much better in the second half because they've had a little more roster stability for the team, and even adding somebody back like Ricky Tiedemann, who was the opening day starter for Buffalo in 24. He was the number one prospect in the Blue Jays organization, had Tommy John surgery later in that year, and much like Chad Dallas, who's gone back and forth from big leagues this year, both pitchers were with the Herd in 24, missed a year and a half basically coming back from Tommy John surgery, and now we're back with the Bisons and kind of helping stabilize that pitching staff and bullpen at times.
Pat, just looking, I guess, now to this specific matchup tonight with Rochester really, you know, hanging on to that top spot, what is it realistic to think the Bisons could have a shot to get there and really overtake them at any point throughout the rest of the season? Or is Rochester kind of just dominating, I guess?
No, the Bisons, I think they definitely have a chance. It comes down to the Bisons played the Red Wings 8 times in the final 20 games, including tonight. So you take the final 24 games from this past Tuesday, Buffalo won the opening game of the series. So if you're the Herd, you're thinking, all right, we're moving right to where we want to be in the standings against Rochester, because they're fighting, the Red Wings are fighting with Indianapolis right now as the top two teams in the second half. They're tied. If the Bisons win today and tomorrow, they'll split the series against Rochester and have the final 6 games of the regular season in Buffalo against the Red Wings. And you just want to give yourself a fighting chance. You got 2 weeks in between then. You know, Worcester, a team that the Bisons feasted on in Worcester a couple of weeks ago, and then a Charlotte team that's kind of about the same, I think, in terms of the way they've played this year, like the Bison. So if you just if you can tread water over these last two weeks plus two games and go into that last week of the season, September 15, within three games or so of Rochester, now you've got given yourself an opportunity. If you take five out of six in that final week, if Rochester falters at all, and it's dependent on other teams around them as well. And the Bison sit in seventh place, so there's other things that have to happen. But just looking at the matchup head-to-head against the Red Wings, if you can win out of these last eight games, six or seven of them, you're looking at a really good spot, and you've picked off a couple of teams probably in the process.
Gotcha. Pat Malacaro with us on the Western Hotline. Pat, I'm just looking at the last six games. They play Worcester, it looks like, right? If I'm not mistaken on that. Where are they at in the standings here? Are they going to be anything to worry about, you know, sneaking up or anything like that? Or being they might not even play in the conference or anything like that, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, so Bisons and Worcester are actually tied right now. In the way that, for folks that don't know, I mentioned right at the start, the season's broken into two halves. Mm-hmm. The International League is just straight up 20 teams. There are divisions East and West, and the Bisons are in a division with Rochester, Worcester, a lot of the old International League North opponents. If you're a baseball fan and Bison fan, prior to 2020, you probably have seen those teams a lot. Syracuse, Lehigh Valley, Scranton, yeah. Wilkes-Barre, they're all in the same division. But really, it's just 20 teams in the league, and whoever has the best record at the end is the winner of each half. So right now, the Bisons are tied with Worcester and the WooSox. I think they're just like 2-8 in the last 10 games.
Oh, wow!
In part because the Bisons won 4 out of 6 in Worcester just a couple of weeks ago. You know, they basically play at home 1 week, on the road the next. So the Bisons were on the road in Worcester 2 weeks ago, won 4 out of 6. And that started the free fall for the WooSox, who were really right around the top spot in the second half. They've fallen since then. So, yeah, next week is important because that's one of those teams that even though you're not passing them, you have to put them in the rearview mirror at some point. So Charlotte is behind Buffalo. That's the last road trip leading into the second last week of the year, right after the Labor Day that week. The Bisons have to keep Charlotte in the rearview mirror, and you have to put Worcester in the rearview mirror next week in order to give yourself that chance the final week of the season against the Red Wings at home for that chance to maybe play spoiler and maybe find your way to the top.
Yeah, so some exciting September baseball in downtown Buffalo. It's exciting. September 1st through 6th. Pat, before we start looking around the MLB, some theme nights coming up as well, right, for the Herd this coming week against Worcester.
Yeah, and one of them is rescheduled from a rainout at the ballpark last week against Lehigh Valley. September 3rd, the Bisons have Harry Potter night where they wear special Patronus-themed jerseys. There's a giveaway at the gate with a Harry Potter banner for the first 2,000 fans through the Swan Street gate. And then on Friday night is another Honda Friday Night Bash for us. And I know I had to explain it to a lot of the players, but we're trying our first ever meat raffle at the ballpark next Friday night.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
So the way it goes, there's 500 pounds of meat that's going to be raffled off throughout the course of the game. And your game ticket gets you an automatic entry into the meat raffle. So if nothing else, if you come out to the ballpark on that Friday night, there's going to be giveaways every inning. So all 9 innings will be giving away different cuts and different types of meat throughout the course of the game. And then you go online. You can do it, I think, even right now. If you go to Bisons.com and the meat raffle page, you can buy your tickets ahead of time for extra chances at the meat raffle. And it's all done, you know, online through the online ticketing system. And we'll just keep drawing numbers. There's going to be a refrigerated meat truck out on the concourse, I believe, just outside the ballpark. You pick up your meat on the way out. So that's a Western New York staple. And, you know, funny enough, the Bisons have a player right now, Peyton Williams. His nickname is the Iowa Meat Truck. He's 6'5", listed at 255. And the funny thing about him is he's from Des Moines, Iowa, and his neighbor owns a premium meat company called the Iowa Meat Truck. Showed up to the ballpark one day wearing a hat. He's a bigger guy, slugging first baseman, so the nickname fit and it stuck. So, the Iowa Meat Truck could potentially be in the lineup for the meat raffle night next Friday.
That's awesome. I saw that highlight on social media, and I was like, "Oh, Pat with the Iowa Meat Truck call, that was awesome." just a quick question about the theme night before we look around the Harry Potter night specifically. Is it similar to how you guys do the Star Wars night, where you actually consult with like Lucasfilm and all of that, or is it more just kind of a celebration kind of a night? I guess.
This one's a little bit different. It is in partnership with the folks at Warner Brothers and Harry Potter. And the difference is with Star Wars Night, you know, if you've ever been out to it before, the Northridge Group puts on the videos that in between innings that lead to the fight scene on the field. We don't do that necessarily for Harry Potter Night. It's more contained to the elements that are kind of provided for us. We can pick and choose different things we want to use, and, you know, like wearing jerseys. You don't have to wear jerseys, but it's a cool little element to add to the game. And we picked those jerseys out just a couple of months ago, and different from last year where it was the Hogwarts theme jersey specifically. This year, the Patronus theme. So the different theme nights have different elements to them. And Star Wars is kind of off on an island on its own in a good way because of all those extra things that we're able to do that with the other theme nights we aren't necessarily allowed to do just at this point.
Pat Malacaro on the Western Hotline. The Bisons trying to get themselves into a prime position here to end the second half of their season. And out at Salem Field, a lot of fun nights still going on. Get your tickets at Bisons.com, by the way. Pat, going around the league as well, though, it's become very fascinating, the wild card races in the MLB, for differing reasons. I mean, the wild card three in the AL is looking like it's something that's just available to everyone because everyone's there, and may the best team win, and it may not even have a good record to them. The NL wildcard's pretty tight race, though, as well. But, Pat, Toronto, 2.5 games back, they're not out of it despite what has been a disappointing season for them after a World Series run last year.
You're right, and I think it just shows how hard it is to actually not only get to the playoffs but to get to the World Series. I think about just 2023 when the Rangers and Diamondbacks were in the World Series. Neither team make the playoffs the next season after the Rangers win it. And you're right, in the American League, someone's going to backdoor into that third wild card spot. So if you're Toronto, big win last night against Seattle. The Mariners are a team. They're in third place in the AL West. Again, a division that somebody has to win, and somebody's going to come out of there with probably not the best record for a division winner, but hey, you've got the division. Someone's got to win it. And this afternoon, a big game against Seattle again. It's a three-game weekend series. I think if you're the Blue Jays, if you can stay a little bit healthy, they signed Michael Lorenzen as a free agent because they just need a pitching depth and somebody that can basically give them 100 pitches if they need it. I believe that's what John Schneider kind of alluded to the other day when talking about the signing. So if you're the Blue Jays, you've got about a month to go in the regular season. If you are above 500 in your final month of the year, you're in a pretty good spot to probably pick off the teams right around you and in front of you and claim all the wild cards. I firmly believe that I do think all three wild cards can come from the American League East. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility because of how the disparity is in the American League and National League this year, and how almost nobody wants that last wild card in the AL. If you're the Blue Jays, just get in, because every year we've seen a wild card team win the wild card round and then stun one of the division winners. A couple of years ago, the Phillies, I believe, went to the World Series after winning the wild card and then defeating the Braves. And Atlanta looked like world beaters after winning the AL East. The Phillies ride the momentum of winning the wild card round. So you almost always see that now in this new world of the three wild cards and six playoff teams in each league. The National League's the superior league, not only just because you've got the Dodgers, but you've got Milwaukee that's going to be tough. So we'll see how it goes, but it'll be interesting this final month of the year who kind of claims those six spots in each league.
Charles McAdoo, by the way, Pat, you got to see a lot of him within the Bisons organization. He gets called up to Toronto after he was just on a tear with Buffalo, but it looks like he's been doing himself pretty well up in the majors here. It's cooled down a little bit for Charles McAdoo, but so far it seems like he's been a nice rotational player for the big club at this moment.
He has, especially when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was on the injured list with that concussion about a couple of weeks ago. McAdoo plays the corner infield positions. He plays first, he plays third. Vladdy's going to play first. Kazuma Okamoto's going to play third most of the time, but when you've got the ability to platoon some guys and give maybe Vladdy a half day off or Okamoto a half day off and have them DH because you want his bat in the lineup, one of the few guys in Okamoto that consistently is hitting home runs for the Blue Jays this year, you've got someone like McAdoo who can spell them and has played well and had a couple of big hits in the not this homestand, but the one prior to it, helping lead to a couple of victories. So he was somebody we had our eye on going into the season, and top 30 prospect in the organization, according to the various services. You know, you wonder how a player who never made it to AAA before would react, but he performed well. He settled in nicely here in Buffalo, and a shortstop by trade, has learned other positions. You can see how good the hands are, and he's very athletic. He plays a lot bigger than his size, and I mean that in a good way, because of the range that he shows, the speed that he has on the bases as well. Can hit a home run, can steal the occasional base, can play multiple positions. So he's a very versatile player, and it's not hard to see why. He's been up and down a couple of times, and the Blue Jays trust that when they call him up from the Bisons, that they can plug him right into the lineup or have him come off the bench when they need it. So it's been a great story this year, one of those great stories that we kind of see every year, and he's the latest one.
Pat Malacaro with us on the Wester Hotline. Pat, I have to ask about the Boston Red Sox. I know not necessarily the Blue Jays are related to the Bisons, but they were on a super hot streak to really rebound, and they're up in the middle of the standings right now in the American League East. What's your take on them from what you've seen, if anything? And they won 7 of their last 10 games, so another 5-game win streak for them there as well. I mean, are they really going to threaten at the end of the season, you think?
I think they will, and some of the moves they made, like adding someone like Adley Rutschman at the deadline, was the blockbuster trade of the deadline. That was one that kind of caught everyone off guard, not just because he went to Boston, but he stayed inside the American League East. The Red Sox gave up a lot, but not their top prospects to do it. That's one thing. The Red Sox have some very good prospects, like Franklin Arias, who's the top prospect in the organization and number 3 prospect in the top 100. He'll be in Buffalo next week with the Woo Sox. So if you're Boston, you've got to love where you're at right now and where your prospect pool is at for the future. I think they're a team, like their inner manager, Chad Tracy, is somebody we saw in Worcester for 3 or 4 years. And I always, we don't really get to know the visiting team manager all that much, but you see their personality a little bit. And I can see how his personality has meshed well with this Red Sox team after they removed Alex Cora from the manager role and installed Chad Tracy. It looked like it wasn't going to go well for a while there, but they're a team. They're getting healthier, getting someone like Trevor Story back. They're kind of performing up to where their expectations were, I think, going into the year. They were the team the last couple of seasons that have always been right around one of those wild card spots, but have been the bridesmaid. It's not the bride these last couple of years. And Craig Breslow, the chief baseball officer, look, his job might have been on the line a little bit with some of the moves he made, but it looks like they're paying off. And I think the Red Sox, they're definitely a team with their pitching come the playoffs. That's the thing in the wild card round. You need good offense, but you need good pitching as well. And I think that's one thing that the Red Sox do have going in their favor.
Pat, I have to ask a question. You mentioned the Dodgers a little while ago. The potential of a lockout with what's going on in L.A., how would that affect the AAA league, right? Would all players be not playing, or would it be the lower leagues? Would they still be playing baseball in some kind of fashion? Is it all-encompassing, I guess, would be the question.
Well, the thing you can look at most recently is the 2022 season. There hasn't been really anything discussed at this point, so there's nothing nothing concrete. But
yeah.
The way that it worked in 2022, remember, there was actually a lockout for the off season. It was leading up to spring training, and that's why, funny enough, the Bisons were the first professional baseball game period played in 2022. the way it worked was, the 40-man roster, so players that the major league teams can select up to the big leagues, were not available during the lockout. So they were not available. They were not allowed to go to the spring training complex. They were not allowed to work out with the team. You were not allowed to have contact with them. But all the players outside of the 40-man roster were allowed to go to spring training. The coaching staff was allowed to talk to them. So again, we still don't know a ton, and there's a long ways to go. I know there's a lot of rhetoric in through the social media and in the media right now about what's going to happen, what might happen, what might not happen. But I think that's the best gauge to go back to, is the most previous instance where there was these labor discussions that took place. And actually, like I said, for a period of time, you forget about it, because the majors didn't miss any actual games. They just kind of moved the schedule around a little bit in 2022. But there was a lockout in the offseason, and that's kind of how it all shook out. And I would expect something along those lines to probably, if there is any type of labor issues lingering this offseason, that's kind of a good guide to go by.
Pat, one of the teams I've been most impressed with, though, in the second half of the season, San Diego. They've been on a tear, in particular after the All-Star break, and but they've been absolutely on a tear. They get slowed down by Pittsburgh, oddly enough, of all teams in their 3-game set, but when it comes to the fact that, you know, the Dodgers, the big bad evil, that, you know, they won the World Series and then they go and just casually add Tarek Skubal. But it's San Diego's that team that has been on the field impressing me the most lately out in the West.
Yeah, and it's sometimes it's about getting hot at the right time and can you sustain it? And I think having a stubbing your toe here and there is fine. But can you sustain, like, kind of like the Red Sox, you know, they pick things up right in July, the end of June, beginning of July, and they've kind of carried that, ridden that wave to this point of the year. Can the Padres now, as they make their late season uptick, can they sustain that now the final month of the year? Look, there was some conversation. Would they move some of their top players, you know, their best reliever and their best pitcher potentially at the deadline, which seems crazy to think, but you know, that was always a possibility, I guess, out there. So for the Padres, they're another team out West. We talked about before, iron sharpens iron, right? If you're playing the top teams, then you're probably, even if you're getting beat up by them a little bit and you're playing 500 ball against them, you're probably playing up to the competition. So you're getting some of those games. And even though they're in July and August and the dog days of summer and it's not postseason action yet, but you're seeing what you kind of are going to go up against in October. So I think it's an opportunity for the Padres playing in that tough division against a team like the Dodgers, against even Arizona, who's fighting for their playoff lives right now as well. So you've got a couple of teams in that West kind of trying to fight for a playoff spot behind the Dodgers. That is going to just make you better for October and maybe give you that chance to really keep the momentum you may be building at this point.
I'm excited to see what the rest of the wild card races are going to sneak up or shake out to be like. But Pat, we'd be remiss if we didn't sneak in a Sabres thing with you here. I mean, the Hellebuck trade request becomes public, which has kind of reinvigorated the conversation of should the Sabres still make a play for the Winnipeg goaltender. Do you think it's the idea you'd want to do, Pat? Or are you like a couple of people where you think it's not as smart as it is fun to talk about that?
Tell me the price in the end. I mean, that's what it's going to come down to me. If you're going to tell me that, you know, Jarmo Kekäläinen was able to hold his line at the draft, not have to give up what was being asked of him by the Jets, and it's only, you know, X, Y, and Z, I'll let you know. I do think there's a value in adding a goaltender like that to your roster. And I know he's maybe had some of those playoff troubles that Winnipeg wasn't able to get over the hump with, but I do think Hellebuck makes your roster better in the end. And I just don't like the idea of a goaltender rotation, even though it did work for the Sabres for a period of time last year, and even got them within, you know, one goal of going to the conference final last year. If you can add a goalie like Connor Hellebuck, you know, by the end of the 5 years that's left on his contract, what kind of a goalie will he be? I don't know. But I do know that he's come up big in a lot of big situations for Winnipeg, and, you know, it's a team game in the end, right? Like, a goalie can steal you a game here or there, but they can't steal you a series. And I think Hellebuck is a goalie that can steal you a game or two and enhance your team to help you win a series. So I think in the end, if you're telling me it's a low fall that Winnipeg is going to get because it's become public and there maybe aren't as many options that are available to Winnipeg, if that's the case, then I think it's well worth it. And if you're Jarmo Kekäläinen, you have to explore the possibility. Maybe it's not worth it in the end. I think that's the one thing. I do trust him as the general manager and the people he has around him, that if it doesn't make sense for the team, the trade that Winnipeg wants, the Sabres are not comfortable with it, then I trust that he's made the right decision, that it's not right at this time.
Pat Malacaro with us on the Wester Hotline. Pat, thanks for the time and wishing you the best on the call tonight. Right here on WGR, 6:45 first pitch. What time's pregame?
6:25 pregame with Duke McGuire and myself, a 20-minute pregame show. And then, 6:45 first pitch from the Flower City. Looking forward to it.
All right, we'll be listening. Thanks, Pat. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Pat Malacaro with us on the Wester Hotline.
Always good to be able to catch up with him.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad we got the hella blurb in there at the end as well. Because
I had to do it. I got to sneak it in there.
Because speaking of that, I want to get into that in the next segment. So we'll take a timeout here. Joe Calley, Derek Kramer, you're listening to WGR.
Of course, adding Hellebuck would be huge for this team. I think it would really change some of the, well, probably a playoff team. Are they top in the division? Do they win the division? They're probably a playoff team. Now, even including Hellebuck's playoff woes, I think they'll be looked at more as a true contender in the Eastern Conference with Florida, Tampa Bay, Carolina, Montreal. You're back up in that group of teams in the conference by making this deal. And that, I think that alone is enticing.
Chad Dedeminisis of Expected Buffalo on Connor Hellebuck and the potential addition there and what that could mean for the Sabres. Wanted to get into this a little bit today because there's some mixed chatter. We talked to Pat Malacarl in the last segment, and his answer was
price point.
Like, that's, I think that's the big thing for everybody.
We had a caller in the first hour that, you know, Brian mentioned, like, he probably relatively doesn't want any business with it at this point. So, you know, we said we would touch on this, and we are going to touch on this. So, Connor Hellebuck, the trade request being public now is what makes it a big deal. The Sabres, in terms of acquiring Hellebuck, I still had always wondered if this was the timeline, even originally. And then I learned that I hated that timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was being driven crazy about the fact that the deal just wasn't getting made done. Jets are dragging their feet. It's very irritating. I just want this thing done. If you're going to do it, do it. But Winnipeg is...
yes, another Canadian team. You were close.
Yeah, I was close, totally. but Winnipeg has been trying to refuse to make this happen. Like, you trade Hellebuck if you're Winnipeg. It is the end of an era of disappointment, mind you. You washed off the Atlanta Thrashers stink, but then you became a disappointment all on your own. If you trade Hellebuck, Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele and Josh Morrissey go into that front office and go, dude, we can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
All of them do it. So that is probably where Winnipeg's hesitation comes from. Hellebuck also has 5 years left on a deal.
He does.
And if I'm Winnipeg, I'm trying, and this is why the public sentiment about this comes out. If I'm Winnipeg, I'm trying everything that I can to make him retain for one more year. Why? Hellebuck currently is in the middle of a no-move clause in his contract. Winnipeg's trying desperately to get him to next year, where it goes down drastically to 10 teams. So he has not nearly as much autonomy on where he wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Hellebuck makes the statement public now, to drive up pressure. And with that, now the Sabres, who were already in negotiations before, and the Devils, who were reportedly in on the sweepstakes in July, they look at Winnipeg and go, your guy said it out loud now.
Well, that's
You can't ask for the world anymore.
Yeah, and that was they would have gotten the best value possible at the draft.
Yes, and the number four overall pick was in play. And
they said no, because they asked for the sky. Like, it was ridiculous. And now you had another window there where it was nearly done, right?
Right.
Reportedly. And that didn't pan out.
Right before the start of free agency in July 1st.
Right. And then post July 1st, everything quieted down. And here we are again. Now the quiet part is out loud. Like you said, he's requesting out. He's put out a statement personally. His agent put out a statement for him. And then now the team put out a statement as well. He can't go to training camp. He can't do that.
He can. He can go to training camp.
It's going to be an uncomfortable situation now, though, for everybody involved, is it not?
It is an uncomfortable situation, but I think there is a difference between Hellebuck's situation and the one that we can use to compare here, Dylan Larkin. Larkin was the team's captain.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be stripped of him. And he has not opened up on his three-team list. Hellebuck may be more interested, but it's that the price of goaltenders is never easy to really find where the line is in the sand.
Right.
And it looks more like it's Winnipeg, not the fact that Hellebuck has a full no move. Because Hellebuck already, reportedly, is willing to waive to go to Buffalo, which is far more...
I mean, that's huge.
well, it's far more willing than what Larkin has provided the Red Wings, for example. It is, I'm already more malleable in my request as opposed to whatever is going to happen here with Larkin. The Sabres also have an opportunity to give Winnipeg some kind of fair value as opposed to the three teams that Larkin has for Detroit. But he could still go to camp. He could still even get some games in the regular season. But to hear the sentiment from Paul of like diagnosing if goaltender is the problem or not, something that you need to upgrade, is also kind of where I posited the theory of like it's training camp or even in season.
See,
you'd be willing to do it. Because say Luukkonen is off to a cold start to start the year, right? Does it make it harder to get rid of him in a way? Yes. However, it becomes the Sabres needing to find that upgrade and acknowledging that they need it. It becomes, okay, UPL is just an inconsistent goalie. That is what it is. We may need to, because of the cap and the contract on this, we may need to even keep him as our backup. So all of a sudden, Alex Lyon becomes part of the conversation.
Well, agreed.
Or Colton Ellis becomes part of the conversation. It is, the conversation changes a little drastically if that were to be the scenario, the case that needs to go up.
I think if you're a serious organization, serious to capitalize on your playoff run last season, this is a move you make.
It's a move you make if you want to tell people you're serious.
And I think that should be what they're doing. If they roll in without making a move like this, what does that tell you?
But I also don't want my general manager to think I need to make a statement publicly about how serious my team is.
Let me ask you this.
Because if I have a general manager that is concerned about the public's feelings about your
team. We already have one of those, and he works for the Buffalo Bills.
I was going to say, we already had one of those. You just fired him.
Yeah.
So I don't need my general manager to care about the perception of the team.
I'm not saying from the public perspective. I'm saying to make the team arrive into the conversation league-wide about being up there, that's like Chad still mentioned, with the Floridas, with the Tampas, right? Like with,
that's still a perception.
I guess you're right. But also, it's to me, what ended up falling apart a little bit in the postseason last year?
It was the goaltending.
The goaltending. If you had Connor Hellebuyck in net, yeah, that could have happened. What are the odds on that, though? A lot less than what happened there.
A lot less than that, but also...
So to me, diagnosing whether or not goaltender's the issue, if you look to how you were bounced out of the playoffs, it's because you had to go to your goalie rotation again, and you didn't know what you were going to get from either of those guys on that night.
I would agree about that. The fact that you would have a consistent presence that allows you the opportunity to just set it and forget it in net, right?
Yeah.
However, the Sabres, as a team, that worked last year. The trio worked. And it worked more when they became a solid duo. When Colton Ellis suddenly is just not in the lineup.
He was the backup permanently, and then the two were rotating on and off the starter. Yes. Yeah.
So, but it was healthily, Lyon's getting games, Luukkonen's getting games. Luukkonen's getting more than Lyon in these things because Lyon does eventually like play himself out of the de facto starter.
Mm-hmm.
And he also gets banged up at the end of the year. However, I don't need this move. The Sabres don't need this move. It is probably the definition of a luxury ad. It's an upgrade. It's not the most important thing in the world. Is it something that would make me feel good? Absolutely. But is it necessary? Not really. They are a good enough team to be able to make the playoffs again as constructed. And I know that people have their questions about Tuck. Tuck was the one that I needed them to handle internally because it was going to be cheaper that way. And more importantly, we don't have to have questions about like, okay, so who's going to go down to Rochester? We have no conversations about that right now. Actually, there is one. Where's Peyton Krebs in the lineup? It's already still jam-packed.
Mm-hmm.
There's no further logjam. And I've seen enough from each of these kids that I feel like the aggregate is going to get it done replacing Tuck's production. I've seen enough from Benson to be that top six player now, who has a contract that he's not moving up and down the lineup anymore. I've seen enough from Jiří Kulík at the beginning of the season.
I don't think that's enough.
When the Sabres were bad, he was averaging a half a point a game. He was still producing, despite the Sabres being a bad version of themselves.
Right. I just think, and I think you need to see more from him to really say you've seen enough, though, because of the injury last year.
And he had 15 goals the year prior as a rookie. You're showing me enough. Not by yourself, but you're showing me enough on your portion of the pie.
I just think you're going to have a logjam. I think you need to move one of these kids, truthfully, because they're going to just be taking roster spots from one another.
Noah Osland kind of becomes the roster move that gets Kevin Adams fired. The only thing he's done wrong is that he got sent down. Lindy Ruff, 2025.
Yeah.
Osland has shown enough that you can have confidence in him. Hellenius comes into the postseason like it's no problem. Honestly, he's the biggest question mark of them all, because sometimes players will show up at the end of a season and be hot. But I've got enough track record between Benson as a top six player. He won't move up and down the lineup anymore. Kulík, in the time that he has had, the year and then the beginning of last season. And then Osland, a player who has been good enough. Kulík and Osland have graduated. They're NHLers. It is now a matter of what else you got. They are comfortably Buffalo Sabres.
Sure.
That's what makes me feel perfectly fine about it.
I don't feel fine. I'm one of the people who think you need to make a move in this division that's already a dogfight. Last season, you need to improve. It's an arms race.
It's an arms race.
And if you sit there on your hands while everyone's escalating, then yeah, I'm not going to feel as good. Because Florida likely will be back, right? It was a fluke season for them not to be involved.
They're putting their eggs in the Jacob Markstrom basket, which, I mean, got balling on a budget, do what you got to do.
Sure.
But
they could
be
threatening in this division.
But I don't trust that. And Brady Tkachuk's not moving the needle for me at all.
Even so, Tampa, Washington, Boston.
It's more Barkov's return that makes me think that Florida should be back.
Right. Boston, even though you could say the same thing you said last season of they're old and they might not make it back, they had a 100-point season last season. So they can make it back.
Do you think, though, that the Atlantic Division is going to do that again?
Yes. I think
that's unrealistic. It's an unrealistic pace.
This season was the precursor to what it's going to be for a while, I believe. You don't do that for one season and then just everyone stops and it goes back to the way it was.
Yeah, and the Pacific Division had a Calgary Flames team miss the playoffs with 94 points 2 years ago. The Pacific Division was one with like 90. It variations year to year.
I understand
happen.
That. But when you're going, when a lot of these teams are arming upward, that's not the trend that's going to show.
It could be fool's gold. I'm not saying it's not competitive. I'm saying it's not going to be hilariously over competitive like last year, where 100 points is wild card one.
I would not be okay with running it back with the same situation. What did the Bills do after they were close? They ran it back with the same situation. What happened? They don't make it to a Super Bowl. If you're looking at them as somewhat of a cautionary tale, I would look at that and be, okay, let's do what they didn't, go attack this thing, and let's go after it.
I'm more saying if it happens, it's awesome. If it doesn't happen, though, the Hellebuck trade, it's okay.
Well, whether it's Hellebuck or something else, I think a move needs to be made. You need to upgrade something.
I don't think that a move needs to be made simply because a move needs to be made.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying a move needs to be made because a move needs to be made. I think a move needs to be made because everyone else is making moves and you're going to be behind the eight ball and you don't want to be complacent sitting there with on your hands, like I've said.
The Montreal Canadiens did not make any moves this offseason.
They still could.
Needle.
And they're
sure,
good.
Sure, then the Sabres still could.
That's what I'm saying.
But
if you go in without that, that's where I'm going to be frustrated.
Those two teams, though, are very similar to each other in terms of age, development, and where they are currently standing in the National Hockey League. They are very similar. They're among the younger teams, but the youth has finally gotten to where they figured it out.
Right, and I think with the Sabres right now, you mentioned all the players, the youth, Hellenius, everyone. They're going to be taking roster spots from each other, and we're going to see Hellenius in Rochester, right? Like, that's not okay.
That's okay. Ready? If Hellenius is in Rochester, that's okay because that tells me that the others are ready.
I just think at that point, when he's just sitting in Rochester, you have a chance to use him to get value elsewhere where you need it, that's when you pull the trigger on a move like Hellebuck. When you need a goaltender, if you had Hellebuck in net, instead of doing that rotation to end the postseason, you likely go on and move past Montreal.
It is, quite frankly, it'd be damn nice to get Connor Hellebuck. It is not a requirement for my excitement for the season. And it's not a requirement for the statement that you need to make around the league either. It is something that, again, it'd be damn nice. But if it doesn't happen, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'm of the school. They
I'm trying
need
to help
something.
You. That's all. Like, if it doesn't happen,
I'm not
going to
be as thrilled about them if they don't do something, because I think you need to establish yourself. You were there last year with what you had. You improve upon it. If you get out of a gunfight, you get knocked out, you don't show up with the same pistol the next time around. You arm up to win the thing. And that's what I think they have to do. 803-0550, the number to call. Got to take a timeout. We'll be back on the other side. Joe Calley, Derek Kramer, you're listening to WGR.
Both competed in stadiums all across the country. Which NFL team has the worst fans and why? I haven't had a personal interaction with them, but I feel like Philly always gets Philly, the Patriots, and then probably the Bills. All the snowballs and all of that during the game, like, that's just a lack of respect for another man. You paid to come to my game, and you trying to, like, you more focused on hitting me with a snowball.
Right.
Words from Devontae Adams there. That I think that was one game, like, ever where the snowballs were an issue, and it was the Bills-Dolphins game a couple years ago.
I don't even know where Adams is referring to that, by the way.
That is that Bills-Dolphins game where Tyler Bass hits the game winner. I was sitting in the stadium for
I'm
that
talking
one.
About Adams. He has to have experienced this, right?
Yeah, they probably talk about it, though. Like, it was all over the place
that,
the next day on
it sounded personal.
The shows and everything.
It sounded personal.
Yeah, he paid that's to come to my thing. Game. No, I don't know if that's how that works, but no one's paying to see you anymore, pal. But anyway.
Wow.
Am I wrong?
No, just harsh.
Yeah. You're wide receiver 2 on the Rams. Congratulations. You know how many of those there have been in the last decade? A lot. You're one of many.
All right.
Sorry. All right. Sorry. I don't know. Coming at Bills Mafia, I'm going to come after you a little bit, but that's going to do it for hour number 2. We'll be back on the other side. Sports Talk Saturday. Joe Calley, Derek Kramer. This is WGR.